Thank you and welcome everyone. I was asked to talk today about community GIS as a potential tool in your toolbox, and I know that many of you, both at this table and around the room, are working in the area of community GIS. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about how I've been approaching it at the Island Institute for the past several years, provide a couple of different examples about ways to engage town offices and schools, and research, and how to conduct research to integrate community into and gather community data that can be used for local planning. And then I hope after the panel we can have a discussion. So, first of all, what is community GIS? You know, a lot of folks now, many of you are probably using GIS at your office or know somebody who does. What is the difference between just a GIS and a community or community integrated GIS? The way that I really like to think about it is it's help you collaborate to provide good information to local decision makers for planning. But the difference is the information isn't just flowing downhill. So it's not something that someone at the town office is digesting and then, you know, making an informed decision about. It's really about creating a process so that local information can, which isn't always necessarily in a formalized environment like in a GIS system. How do you make sure that that information gets into your decision planning process so that you're not just running a query and it's actually grounded in what's happening on the ground and folks, your fishermen and your coastal users are really feeling like their voice, they have a stake in the process. You know, I think a couple years ago, I think it's amazing because even a couple of years ago you would start with what is GIS, you know, and really with the advent of Google Earth and things like that, you don't have to talk about that anymore. It's very accessible, people understand it. So how are they putting it to use? At the Island Institute, for the past 7 years, we've been asked to more and more to start building capacity in local town offices for using GIS as a decision support tool. If many of you guys are from large towns in the state of Maine, you're thinking we've had that for a long time. But more and more smaller towns, you know, we have a town of 40 people that we're working with that has GIS capacity now within their town office. So I think more and more it's being used as a tool. So how is that working, and what are the support structures to make that happen? One of the biggest barriers, of course, is someone who actually knows what buttons to push. How we've been approaching that is often folks apply to us for an Island Institute fellow that provides training and things like that. There's a number of also different GIS resource centers throughout the state who act as support centers for getting GIS capacity into town offices. So I don't really want to talk too much about how exactly that happens. What I think is most interesting about how it's been working and the towns that we've been working with is sort of the local management side of things, and that is, and many of the town offices have actually created a GIS management committee where it's made up just like your local planning board who uses the information. It's really more about what information do we have in our toolbox, where did it come from, what do we need to update, what's missing, who has access to it, right? Because a lot of information that is critical for planning often is also very sensitive. So who has access to the information, why, and who's going to be collecting it. So I think it's just an interesting model to think about for as you're looking at managing and updating your information. It doesn't necessarily all reside with one, you know, your GIS coordinator. It really is important for it to be a broader conversation with folks within the town. And that the image that I had there was just an example of a local harbor management plan that was conducted as part of a needs assessment that happened on Islesboro, came out of the GIS committee and then was implemented by their local GIS person. One of the other ways, and I think resources that many communities don't necessarily tap into, is their K-12 schools. One of the other things that I work really closely with at the Island Institute is how to bring, helping teachers learn to use GIS technology to connect with their local community. So working with teachers and students actually together, right, because students actually learn this technology much faster than many adults. And more schools within your community are getting these skills. Is anyone here from Searsport or Stockton Springs by any chance? No? Okay. Well, I'll talk about them anyway. One of our, we have a National Science Foundation funded technology education project, which helps to provide the training for these schools. When the town of Stockton Springs and Searsport were doing a joint harbor management plan, they actually approached, they heard that the school kids were, had this knowledge and approached them to say, how can you help us gather the information that we need for this plan, and how do we get you involved? And I think as we're looking, especially, we're planning towards the future, right, and our students are that future. So getting them more and more involved in how to, in the decision-making process, providing really authentic learning experiences for them using this technology and actually becoming a really great resource for your town, because often investing in that can be a large expense, is a great opportunity on both sides of the board. So just a resource to consider in your community if you're not already tapping into it. The images here, again, one from Islesboro. This was actually done this past summer. We hold an annual summer institute up at Acadia National Park, and with all the things happening around ocean energy right now, and there's 3 wind turbines that are going on board. Actually, I think the flip might be switched this afternoon on one of the turbines, actually. There's a lot of talk about renewable energy and wind energy, and so some students on Islesboro were really interested in studying that aspect as part of their local project and created a viewshed assessment of what the impact would be for their community, what was their wind resource, and that kind of thing. That was a presentation that they made for their local community. And then I think one of the other tools that I'll provide an example of how we're working with communities with this as well, but I think it's important to mention another aspect of this for working with the kids is, you know, GIS isn't just all about numbers. It's also about being able to capture and tell a good story. And so one of the other ways that we're working with the students is to help provide them, what are the ethnographic research methodologies, so they can ask good questions from their community members. How do you catalog that in a way that it can be queried and accessible? And so the other picture is students actually conducting an interview of the old caretakers from the Darling Green Center when it was a gentleman's farm, and then they created a historical map of that facility. So, you know, data is really important. So are the stories behind all those numbers. Oh, the other way. That's okay. Okay, so also, what does community GIS look like at work in local, regional, and statewide research studies? So I want to talk about a couple of examples that I've been working on most recently. One of them, I don't know how many people are familiar with the Midcoast Fishermen's Association. They're a group down in Port Clyde, one of the last ground fishing folks south or north of Portland, east of Portland, I guess I should say. And they are, they're known for working really collaboratively and are really innovative in the way that they are approaching their work. When we just started working with them as an organization, we walked into the St. George Town office and found 12 probably large nautical charts that they had hand-drawn all of their fishing territory on. The mobile gear, so their shrimp gear, their gill net gear, their eel barrels, otter trawls, as well as how that all interacted with the lobster fishing territory. And they've done it not just for the present, but they've done it also back to 1980. So they had these 2 amazing snapshots that unfortunately were fading and starting to not be quite as useful anymore just because it was out of date, and it takes a long time to draw for the entire Gulf of Maine what their resource looked like. As a small project, I helped them digitize that information, and they're also really interested in telling a story about how they're fishing, as a very responsible management practice. And they're doing a lot of gear research and things like that. But the other thing they're doing is, fishing soft bottom. Fishing up hard bottom tears up their nets and things like that. But how do you tell that story? And so, I was able to digitize their the local knowledge that they had already put on a map and compare that with bottom type information to really help them quantify exactly, you know, what they already knew in their heads. But a lot of times you sort of need, a map sort of helps tell a really good story. And so that's one example of how we've been working with local knowledge. One of the other research projects that I've been working on, it started back in 2005, wrapped up in 2007. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on this because it's not necessarily just a methodology, but there's also data that I think might be useful to many of you guys if you're not already aware of it, is a statewide working waterfront access mapping project. You can go to the next slide. And this, one back. And this project aimed to, you know, working waterfront is, and maintaining working waterfront is a large issue in the state. There's a lot of people working on that, and there's many of you guys working on that. There, anecdotally, it's very, you know, it's sort of easy to say how information had been, or how properties, excuse me, had been, you know, being lost to sales and being converted to non-fishing uses. But there was no real information about exactly how much access was out there, what it looked like, was it public, was it private, what was the infrastructure. And so we sort of embarked on this data collection study to be used for local decision making and also to look more broadly regionally and statewide at what kind of policy initiatives, help inform policy initiatives that folks were working really hard on at the state level. So with a working group, we developed a methodology that included going to each of the 149 different coastal towns, looking at aerial photographs, and having folks identify areas that provided waterfront access within their community, and then having a discussion about what types of, what that infrastructure looked like. Was it public? Was it private? Was it all tied access? Was there a ramp down to the boats? And it took about 6 months, actually, just to develop a methodology that encompassed all of the different types of infrastructure that are available up and down the coast. You can go and talk to one town and you can paint a very clear picture. You go to the next town and you realize your questions and your data you were collecting don't match. And so another sort of important thing about community GIS is listening and remaining flexible and sort of creating a data structure. I'm a data geek, I'll admit. But creating a data structure around, you know, that tells the story and gives people who aren't necessarily as intimately familiar with it a way to easily gather and digest that information. So we can go to the next slide. This is just an example of, you know, of sort of the final product. Not only did we collect information on waterfront access, but we also collected information about what towns had waterfront use zoning and what that looked like, so to sort of identify how many communities were using that as a protection tool for their working waterfront. At the end of the study, each community received a digital data that they could use for local planning. They also received hard copy maps. We came out with a publication a couple years ago called The Last 20 Miles. I know there's a copy of it at the Island Institute booth if you get a chance to take a look. And it's been used, I know, for properties that are interested in applying for the waterfront access pilot, the bond money, for example. So that's just one example. I think I have statistics from that on the next slide, but I also know that I am running out of time. So this is just, you know, we collected 1,555 points, 45% were public access, 55% were private. One of the other major points from this study, and I think generally to make, is again about the issue of local information and the sensitivity of it. So, you know, in this study, 55% said it was private access. A whole lot of property that, when I talk to folks, I know it wasn't on the map because it was private property and they didn't want to show it up as waterfront access. And I think that's really important point when you're thinking about planning, is there's a lot of information that people are willing to give you, and there's a lot of information that they know and they're not necessarily willing to give you. And so how do you have the conversation about data sharing and getting information, good information out there so that you can make the decisions that you need while still protecting folks' privacy and the sensitivity of their local knowledge. You know, only less than 30% fell within waterfront access use, and that was shocking to me, was only 81 were considered prime working waterfront access, so that was, had all tide access, access to fuel, and adequate parking, and only 62 points of those actually provided commercial fishing access. So those are just sort of some statistics. I wanted to give you an idea of the kind of information that was available if you are interested in accessing this data. If you are interested, please let me know. Feel free to give me a call. Because of the sensitivity of the data, we do sort of have several different steps in order to release it, but I'm happy to talk with you and provide more information about that if you are interested. I think I have one more slide, but it's just basically saying if you are interested in learning more about community GIS, feel free to let me know. Also, you know, take a look at the organizations around you within the state. I know the Center for Community GIS has a great resource lab, University of Miami-Mitch Hyatt, College of the Atlantic. I see Judy Colby George in the room. She has a great shop that works on these types of issues. So feel free to track one of us down, and we're happy to talk with you more. Thank you.